flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling at Hot Cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with Alan Alder and me, Matt Bentman. So have you had an interesting week, Alan?
Yes, I have. I went to talk to Richard Stokes at Finboy's, who was as interesting as he always is. And I went into what I call the hidden cake shop as well, which was very good. However, in the local food scene, there has been rather a mixture of good and not so good news, which we'll talk about more in the programme today.
A hidden cake shop, though, eh? I hope you'll be revealing where that is.
I will. What have you been up to then, Matt?
Well, I've revisited the Edge Cafe on Mill Road. I first went to see them 8 years ago, shortly after they opened, and I wanted to do a catch-up and see what's changed. I've also popped by the Cambridge Wine Merchants on King's Parade ahead of their new Beginner's Guide to Wine event.
And Sue Bailey, who's not able to be here today, had a tip-off from foraging chef Steve Thompson about a good place to eat. So she went and ate. She was very impressed and spoke to the couple running the restaurant for today's flavour. So that's coming up too.
And also on today's programme, we'll have our regular features, free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup.
But first, let's pop over to Hildesheim to see not Flourish, but the couple running the Pear and Olive. That's the restaurant that so impressed Sue. She spoke first to Josh and then Jade, and they took it over about 18 months ago.
I gather, Josh, that you've got a background in working in restaurants, both in London and in the Cambridge area. Tell me a bit more about that and how that's influenced what you're doing for yourself now.
I started at a very young age. I just turned 13 in Fordham, actually, at the White Pheasant. So I just started off as KP. And then one day they were going under, so I decided to try and jump in and help. And that was the beginning, really. They asked me if I wanted to be a chef. And yeah, I stayed there for quite a few years, worked with quite a few good chefs. And then went to Newmarket, went to the Bedford Lodge Hotel. And then that's where I met Jade. We stayed working there for a few months. And then we decided that we had an opportunity to go work in London. So we both went to London. Worked in London for just over 7 years. Worked in 5-star hotels, Michelin, Rosette, French brasseries. Just got so many experience. Worked with some really good chefs. Same for Jade also.
I really wanted to get like an overall hospitality experience. So I did hotels, I did restaurants, big and small. I did the high end, the low end, everything in between. I did events, you name it. I did the hospitality version of it just to learn as much as I could possibly learn in that time, which was our goal with moving to London. We were ready to do something more. I think we needed that big city lifestyle for a little while.
What was the sort of chef that influenced you most in London, would you say?
I worked for Tom Akins, who is a really good chef to learn from. Ingredients he used the best and only the best. I worked at a place called Maison Francois with Matt Ryle. Again, he's a very good chef and he taught me how to do a lot of classical French cooking. He's probably one of the top ones.
So many
chefs. Yeah.
That's great. Well, in fact, I mean, I was recommended to speak to you by Steve Thompson, who we often have on the programme as the foraging chef. And I'm delighted to be talking to you now. So what is your sort of theme and approach for your menus, would you say?
It's like modern European. We hate to use the word fine dining, but yeah, it is quite fine dining. We use a lot of world produce. We only have 3 starters, 3 mains, and 3 desserts. So it's a very small menu. It's a small kitchen, but we do everything fresh. We make everything in-house. We like to do terrines. We like fish for starters, fish for mains, meat. When game season's in, we use local gamekeepers to get the game in for us. Anything that I can forage, I'll try and forage for myself. Try and keep it as fresh as possible, very seasonal. So as soon as something goes out of season, we change it, whether it's the whole dish or just elements of parts of the dish.
So what's on the menu today?
For this evening, we've got a ham hock and chicken tureen with pickled Jarol mushrooms with a honey mustard dressing, octopus with fried potato and romesco sauce. Main courses, we've got a really nice cod dish on at the minute. It's quite fresh. We've got a crab bisque with courgettes that are grown local from Flourish. We've also got lamb with glazed aubergine. Again, aubergines are from Flourish. So we do like to use Flourish quite a bit.
Yes.
They're just round the corner from us, literally just walk round the corner. And also we've got a stuffed chicken with set mushrooms and like a lentil and pea fricassee, which is it's not heavy, but it's quite a heavy-ish dish because obviously the weather has been up and down, and it's quite nice to have that comfort food. And then for desserts, we've got pistachio cake with meadow sweet ice cream. Meadow sweet is something that I forage in the local meadow, really, with the cherries. That's the menu for tonight.
That sounds absolutely delicious. And so what are the days that you're open? Because I gather you're open evenings, not at lunchtimes at the moment. Is that right?
It is. Unfortunately, we're the two of us most of the time. We also have Imi, who works like 2 days a week every now and again, but she's at college as well. So we can only handle so much. And we did originally start with lunchtimes, and we just realised we actually weren't doing our best the whole time. So we thought we need to strip this down. We need to do our best every single service. And our way to do that was to do 4 evenings a week. So we do Wednesday through to Saturday, 4 evenings, 6 till 10. It doesn't sound like a lot, but with all the other work that is behind the scenes of actually making this happen, it is still a lot of work just for the two of us. So for now, we've stripped it right down, but obviously the goal eventually would be to open up a few more sort of time slots availability.
And how have you been received by the local community?
Oh, we are
overwhelmed.
So, honestly, it's actually so overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, people come in and the comments. Sometimes you really get in our... We get in our own head because we are... Although we're the two of us and we're together all the time, we're also not, because Josh is in the kitchen all day and I'm out front all day. So although we sort of seem to be with each other 24/7, we don't really see each other. And so sometimes you can just get really in your own head about, like, what are we doing wrong? What should we change? What should we do better? Some nights are really quiet. Why are we quiet? And you start second-guessing yourself all the time. And then in those moments, someone will come in that night and they will just give us the most amazing compliments, or they'll write to us afterwards or send us a postcard. Or honestly, the comments and the positivity we get from people is really what has kept us going for this long.
So do you find you get people coming from both Cambridge and Saffron Walden and further afield?
Yeah, we do. The more we're open, the more we find we are getting people from further afield, and that word of mouth is going around. When people come out from Cambridge, I would say that's probably the biggest compliment for us, because there's so much in Cambridge. Why should they come to us? Why should they come out of their way to come here? And for me, that is massive. Like, people who actively find the bus times and get on the bus, or they're getting taxis here, or even if they're just driving here and using the car park, that for us is a massive compliment. And if people are then returning from those places that have already got places right on their doorstep, that's the biggest compliment you could have, returning customers anyway.
And I applaud your idea of sort of starting smaller and then getting bigger as you go along, because there's a limit to what two people can do. Goodness me, yeah.
There really is. And honestly, we rope our four-year-old in as much as possible, but he's only so...
Oh, I love that.
He loves a sweep, doesn't he? He loves a dustpan and brush. But we actually started much bigger. When we first opened, we matched the previous owner's hours, because we thought, why not? If they're doing it, we should be able to do it. So we actually started with the 4 evenings, and we did 3 evenings, 3 lunches, something like that. And oh my, we could not do it. We could not keep up. And people would sit for a really like nice long lunch, which is exactly what we wanted. That was brilliant. But then it would get to 5:30 and I'm like, I need that table for dinner. And also, I haven't eaten yet today. And I would really have liked to have sat down for 5 minutes or something. We just couldn't. That if people ate all of Josh's prep at lunch, he then only had a few hours to redo it for dinner. And we obviously know we're running a small menu anyway, so we want to make sure that that's all available. But as fresh as possible and as made on the day or the day before as possible. And so it was, we just need to stop. We really had to like sit down, strip it back and go, what can we do and manage and then do our absolute best with? Mm-hmm. And that was, and we've realised once we did that and did these four evenings, we really feel like this is the sweet spot for us for the moment until we can build up a team or whatever it needs to be to get bigger and better. But for now, this is where we're at, and this is perfect for us, honestly.
If they haven't worked in the business, they just don't realise what goes on behind the scenes. All the ordering, the cleaning, preparing of menus, all the financial side. There's a lot to cover, isn't there?
Never ending.
Yeah.
It's never ending, especially when you're the boss of your business and we haven't got investors or... It's like what we say, it's just the two of us, so it is down to everything for us.
But everything's so much more personal because of that as well. Like, you take so much more pride in everything. The day, on a Wednesday, we work the longest days, where it's the first day that we open, we take Ollie to nursery, we drop him off. We've only been here a year. Business terms, a year and a half is really not a lot, and so... we've just got to keep pushing. Like, we have to just keep believing that what we're doing is right. There's a place for us here, and we can just stay here, do what we're doing, and love as much as we can, as long as we can, and then just, just grow and get better. And
That's perfect.
We'll see.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much, and best wishes for growing in the future and your little one.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Brilliant.
Yeah, running a restaurant really does sound like hard work, but so rewarding, though. You can hear it in Jade's voice. That was Jade and Josh from Pear and Olive in Hildesheim.
I'm free. I'm free.
Now details of free food available in and around Cambridge, and the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, and that exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right, and today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Alison in Great Shelford has picked up a load of loose bakery items from Tesco: 8 croissants, 5 almond croissants, 9 chocolate croissants, 6 pain au chocolat, 3 cheese twists, 2 pretzels, as well as a stack of loaves and baguettes, all available for collection. People can have up to 8 items each, she says, just to make it fair. Eva on Campkin Road has a box of Nespresso Leggero coffee pods to give away, 9 left from a pack of 10. Very nice, she says, just not to her taste, apparently. And finally, Marie has a box of ProCal powder protein sachets. I think these are protein shakes for building muscle, so hopefully of interest to someone out there. But that's all from our brief look at free food today, available on the Olio app for Cambridge.
Yeah, but talking about coffee, Matt, when we got our award from Velvet magazine that wonderful day, in our goodie bag, there was some coffee from Wood Street Coffee, wasn't there? Have you tried it?
I've been saving it, actually. I've got another pack.
Finishing another pack.
I am. Right.
Well, I have tried it, and I must say it's good coffee, worth looking forward to.
Very nice.
Right, there's another free app. Well, most apps are free, aren't they? There's another app called Too Good To Go, and that has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops. This lot does cost, but it's usually less than half price. And they don't specify what you're going to get because they don't know what's going to be in surplus that day. But all sorts of organisations use it, as local ones, like, for example, the Barrington Village Stores has used it, Namaste has used it, Novi has used it. Also the big international countrywide stores like Greggs, Budgins, Marks and Spencers. So that's worth looking at too. And you've had experience about, I think you said on the last programme, about a friend of yours getting a particularly worthwhile lucky bag or whatever they're called.
That's right, yeah, they're grand. I think the key point is they change all the time, so you never know what you're going to get. They always quote the value of what's going to be in the bag, so you know you're always getting a good deal.
Yeah.
And even if you don't, if the food doesn't necessarily come to your taste, you can always share it out, right? Yeah, I mean, you're still a winner all the way. Yeah.
Very good.
Anyway, let's move on to our first news break now for Saturday, the 23rd of August, and we begin with Daily Bread. They're the cooperative off of King's Hedges Road. They've closed and the company has been dissolved. The most recent social media posting says that they will reopen, but they're not sure when. Flavour has learned that a letter is awaited from Companies House, which will allow them to reopen, but it's not known when that letter is likely to arrive.
Regular listeners will know that Daily Bread has been trying to raise £20,000 on the crowdfunding site GoFundMe. And when we checked on Wednesday, that amount had been reached. In fact, £20,025 had been raised, including one donation of nearly £5,000. So we hope that that will ensure that they do have a future. They've been deep cleaning the premises and doing new signs, so they obviously do think they have a future. But let's hope it gets underway soon. We will let you know. And we will shop there as well.
Yeah. Some sad news from Cafe Abantu in Hobson Street. Wendy Slade has decided to retire. The cafe closed last Sunday and is no more. It's going to be missed by its local customers. But best wishes to Wendy and all the staff.
Yeah. However, there's some very good news from Helen Underwood of the White Cottage Bakery. She was facing the sale of the premises and had closed down her regular baking workshops, but she has now secured the funding to stay at White Cottage, and so the classes will resume from September, and there are details of what's coming up on her website.
Bea Wilson has started her own Substack feature. It's called Until Golden, and food will feature heavily, of course.
Frederick's in Magdalen Street, which we featured recently, has a new website from which you can order takeaway items. There's coffee and cakes, a selection of sandwiches that includes pastrami, salmon, Italian summer vegetables and French summer vegetables. Well, to give you an idea, actually, of one of them, that last one has conte and cucumber with microgreens and beetroot mayo on a buttery baguette. That just sounds fantastic to me. They are the creation of Alexa, who operates as Clandestine Kitchen and who is behind the meals at NY Wines in Great Shelford. Also available are things like crisps, salads and a variety of drinks.
Hannah Hoskins, who trained in New York, she set up a home bakery in Washington, D.C. and then moved back to England and reopened her bakery at her new home in Newnham. Well, she now has a shop where she bakes and sells her cakes, friands, scones, granola and other joys. Here's Hannah with more detail about what she's selling, where and when.
I've got various things today. I have scones. Every day I'll have a savoury scone, a sweet scone, some cookies, and then a mixture of cakes and smaller cakes like friands and brownies and things.
Right. What about the larger cakes? What type?
So I've got some layer cakes today. Today there's an olive oil blackberry honey cake and a chocolate bundt cake. There'll probably always be a layer cake. And then obviously if you want your own whole cake, you can just send me an email and pre-order something. So I've got a wedding cake and a big birthday cake going out this weekend, which is exciting.
Okay. Tell us where the shop is.
So the address is 31 B Eltersley Avenue, but that will take you to Marcy at Flux on Eltersley. So you have to get there and then walk round the corner onto Grantchester Street.
So past the jewellers.
Past the jeweller, and you will find my blackboard and a gate, which, if I'm open, will be open for
okay,
you to come
and when are you open?
At the moment, Thursday, Friday, Saturday in the mornings, and then hopefully when school starts again in September, I'll be adding a Wednesday to that.
And is there any link-up between Flux, the coffee shop, and you? I mean, can you buy cakes here and go and eat them in the coffee shop
so
or
you
vice
can,
versa?
You can definitely order your coffee and then bring it round in a takeout cup and sit in the garden out here, or you can... People have been coming and buying their cake or cookie and taking it back and sitting outside Marcy's and having it there. So you can now have coffee and cake. We just have to move between two locations to get
them. That's very French.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, well, good luck with
Thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You.
And Hannah's bakery is called Monroe Street Bakery. So the actual entrance to the shop is in Grantchester Street, just round the corner from Eltersley Avenue, and as we said, past the jeweller. Worth going. It has granola as well. Lovely.
Street food lovers are in for a treat tomorrow morning, that's Sunday, when the Cambridge Criterium returns to Jesus Green for its second year. There will be street food available from Wandering Yak, Pimp My Fish, HK Hit Wrap, Pizza Mondo, Scotty's Scotch Eggs, Jack's Gelato, Churro's Bar, Cambridge Luxury Bakes, Brewboard, Ninth Coffee and Trucchiato Coffee Company. The event runs from 11 till 5pm and there's going to be lots of stalls and activities too, including a cargo bike race, elite races for men and women, gridding and presentations. It's going to be a great day out by the sounds of it. So anyway, that's all for now. More news later.
Now, one of the most exciting restaurants in Cambridge, in my view anyway, is Finboy's in Mill Road. Its menu changes very frequently and they have a good number of special events. They just don't stand still. And the food is superb. So the news that they are contemplating moving to 7 days a week opening is very good indeed. I went along to ask co-owner Richard Stokes about it, and we talked too about their forthcoming tuna night. Richard, you're thinking of opening 7 days a week, opening on Sundays and Mondays in addition to the other days. What would you, anything different on the menu on Sundays and Mondays?
We're thinking of doing a small plates menu both on Sunday lunchtime. We'll be shut Sunday evening, but probably slightly extended hours, or 11:30 till 3:30 probably on Sunday. And Monday nights, not open on Monday lunchtime. And then we'll open all day Tuesday rather than just Tuesday evening. So it will be a 7 day week operation.
People like small plates, don't they?
Yeah, we offer at the moment. We have like nibbles and snacks, there's 8 dishes, and then raw and cold and hot starters, there's another 8 dishes. So we've got like 16 sort of small dishes to choose from, and then 3 or 4 mains at the moment. So it's always been led by sort of a lot of small plates, sort of snack plates, which people share a great deal, really. So we thought we'd just carry that on for the Sunday and Monday services. If we can just get a couple of members of staff, we're looking to add 2 more to our team of 5 chefs already.
What you said about people liking starters, do people sometimes just have starters?
Some do, yeah, have 6 or 7 starters, but even if they're having mains, you tend to, a table of 2 will share 4 or 5 dishes and then probably have a main between them as well. So there's no hard and fast rules here, really, to be totally honest. People can come in and just enjoy a dozen oysters. It's really not a problem. But, I think fish is set up really for sort of small plates. It's got a large selection of small dishes anyway. We just thought we'd carry that on for Sunday lunch and Monday evenings.
I think it is becoming more common, isn't it, that people maybe don't have a main?
I think people like the to have, you know, a number of dishes to share.
If you're interested in food, you want to try a lot of different things.
I think so, yeah. And people always sort of praise our menu as being quite different compared to many other restaurants as well, and looks different and has lots of different ideas on there. So
and very rapidly changing, or frequently changing.
Yeah, we change the whole menu every couple of weeks, but we can change dishes daily as well, due to what's available. But we try and change the whole menu every 2 weeks. We get lots of regular customers, and it keeps everybody interested, and staff as well.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about, you've got a tuna night coming up as well.
A whole British tuna.
Third of September.
Yeah, and wines from Hal as well, from Cambridge Wines. Probably one of the most sustainable fisheries in the world, really, our tuna, British tuna. I think the first year, 2 years ago, when licence were granted, there was 5 boats on the south coast, 4 of them from Cornwall. I think last year it was 11 boats fishing, and I think they've got 17 boats fishing now, but they're only allowed to catch 2 fish a week. So I don't think there's many more sustainable fisheries in the world at the moment, really, than the British tuna season.
Yeah, I was looking at the menu, which is, it's quite Japanese influence, isn't it?
I think probably our weekend menus, when we do the 6 and 7 course tasting menus, there's probably more Eastern style dishes on there than Western, I guess. It sort of lends itself more to smaller plates. We've got, and using different cuts from the fish, so we've got using a toro and the chitoro, and we're using a collar and the head to make a dashi, and then we're using the fat also in some miso madeleines for a dessert. So we've got 6 different dishes, all including tuna. And hopefully, depending on what sort of sized fish we get, I'll probably be butchering some myself, or Jay will be butchering some on the night in front of people as well, as preparing and serving the dishes that are on the menu. And then Hal's chosen quite a few different wines. We've got some sherry and sake, and we've got some Australian white, and we've got a lovely orange wine from Georgia, and a Pinot from Essex. And then to finish off, we've got a demi-sec champagne as well. So all bases are covered with the wines to show how, many different wine styles work with one product, tuna.
And how popular is Tuna Night proving?
Oh, it sold out in 24 hours, so that was really great. we were wondering if we should extend it for another night, but we've got bookings all that week and I don't really want to cancel anybody just to put a tuna night in, but it's something we probably could do another week in the next, you know, 3 months or so, until the sooner season ends. We could probably find another night to do it. I think there's probably enough traction there that we probably could offer another night again, whether it's going to be with wine or without. We'll have to speak to Hal about that. But yes, I think we probably could do another night. We've got another special night coming on the first Wednesday of October with Chris Wilson from Gutter and Stars Wines as well. He's chosen our little place to do his 5-year anniversary. So we've got 16 wines he's showing at night. So three different cuvées from each of the five vintages, with a plate of our lovely fish to go with each one. And Chris will be hosting that in October. So that should be a special night, but we might be able to do another tuna night probably in November. I need to speak to Joe about it as well, just see if he's getting any ideas for a different wine night.
Right, well, we'll look out for it.
Thank you very much, Anna. Thank you.
Thanks.
And that was Richard Stokes from Finboys.
Okay, time for a bit more news now. And let's begin with the Bank Micropub in Willingham, which has a social tomorrow from 1 till 5pm featuring Greek food.
Also tomorrow, a foraging walk and workshop from 8.45 to midday at the Linton Bakery, which is at Flourish in Hildesham. It will include a guided foraging walk around Hildesham, a wild food workshop and cooking demonstration. Book via Instagram or email hopsandtales@gmail.com, and the cost is £45. But if you can't make it tomorrow, or if it's booked up, don't despair. There's another one on the 13th of September.
Some market news now, and there is a market in Haslingfield on the 31st of August. That's from 10 till 1 with food and drink, food trucks, craft and beauty stores, and there's indoor and outdoor seating too. That's at the Village Hall. Also on the 31st is the Grandston's Farmers Market, and on the 6th of September is the Linton Farmers Market. There's also farmers markets at Caxton in September as well, on the 14th, and Histon on the 20th.
And there's a harvest market at Burwash Manor on the 6th of September, a food and craft market at the Hawkston Centre in Hawkston on the 21st of September, that runs from 10 till 4. Chiefly Market happens on the 21st of September, and Cambridge Vegan Market on Parker's Peace on the 28th of September.
And on the 4th of September, Bricks and Mortar in Whittlesford has a special evening celebrating the people behind Saffron Grange and the Rare Breed Meat Company. There'll be tastings, wood-fired dishes, and the stories behind the produce. Bookings are being taken now.
Thorn Wines has one of its very popular wine dinners on the 11th of September at Mercado Central, which is in Green Street, celebrating the sherries of diatomists, whose founder will guide diners through a tasting of their full range of sherries. And of course, Mercado Central will provide the food, which includes wild Cornish monkfish and scallop with cured pancetta and anchovy with aged sherry vinegar. Places will go very quickly, and there are only 14 available anyway. The cost is £95, and they're available from Thorn Wines website.
Here's news of a date change. Amelie at Wicken Vineyards' celebration of the end of summer has moved from the August bank holiday over to the 12th of September. There's going to be live music, including a DJ in the orchard, relaxed garden games, and available for purchase throughout the evening will be drinks and Amelie's famous flamcouche. Early booking is recommended, and so are deck chairs and or picnic blankets.
There's a Bordeaux wine dinner at Market House on the 26th of September, a collaboration between Bill Brogan of Market House and Hal Wilson of Cambridge Wine. The cost is £95, and there will be six wines paired with a five-course menu.
And on the 26th and 27th of September, it's Cambridge Oktoberfest. There'll be one on Jesus Green, and also an Oktoberfest on the 26th at North Stow Tap and Social.
Well, we're off for a quick break now, but we'll be back in about 2 minutes' time with news about a new series of wine tastings at Cambridge Wine Merchants, and we'll have a catch-up with the Edge Cafe as well, so don't go away.
Cambridge Radio. New Music Generator is the programme where we champion the Cambridge music scene. Tim Willett has studio interviews, live sessions, and the latest local tracks sent to the inbox.
And as always on the Wednesday show, we start off with the One to Watch track, new music from the inbox from the last week, plus some familiar releases from the last couple of weeks as well.
New Music Generator with the Portland Arms, Wednesdays at 7 and anytime at cambridge.radio.
The annual Bridge the Gap charity walk returns to Cambridge on Sunday, September the 14th. I'm Neil Thompson from Romsey Mill.
And I'm Lana Matthews from the Arthur Rank Hospice Charity. Come join us on this family-friendly, leisurely stroll through the grounds of some of Cambridge's finest colleges in support of our charities. The walk starts and ends on Parker's Peace, where there'll be food, drink and entertainment for everyone.
Hundreds of people have already signed up, so don't miss out. Just visit arhc.org.uk/BTG.
Or look out for the QR code on the Bridge the Gap posters and flyers displayed across Cambridge.
Cambridge Radio. Welcome back to Flavour. Now, Sarah Dickinson is the cafe manager at the Edge Cafe at the very end of Mill Road. That's why it's called the Edge. I visited in 2017 shortly after it had opened, and I went back this week to see how they're getting on. The Edge is a recovery cafe. It helps people with addiction back into work. Sarah's in recovery herself and loves working with and helping her team make a really great menu for the public. One of the new things this week is the midweek special.
It's called Cheap Wednesdays. We just came up with that. And what's lovely about that, that we have to be creative. It started at £3, but it's now £4.50, and you can get a hearty meal for that. Mm. We've had all sorts of things. Tomorrow is going to be a chicken and ham pie. So we're going to make our own vegetarian pie to go along with it, and then we're going to make mashed potato with it and some peas.
Excellent.
Yeah, so it's lovely to bang heads with the others. Hey guys, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
One day a load of wraps came in and we made, you know, tortillas.
It's a cafe for everybody.
Exactly. And I do really remember in the very beginning where people in need did find us, but there would be people local who would come and you could see they were a bit nervous. Mm. But it just isn't like that anymore. Everybody feels at home knowing someone with severe difficulties, be it mental, physical, addiction especially, that you can just come and sit amongst people who don't struggle with that but might know a family member who does, or literally just feel, you know, because we all have to live on this earth. So
very good. This is, I like coming here because it's very good.
One of the key points about the cafe, this was a line from the website actually, the Edge was created because there was something missing.
I've had this safety net all this time and now it's gone.
People who were leaving specialist treatment services didn't have a place to go that they could call their own, but it was a place that kind of gave them an opportunity, a stepping stone, to get back into the work life.
It really is. So there wasn't anything like this when I came out of treatment. Coming out of addiction, you're shaking, your confidence is shot, and it's a very uncomfortable place to be in. And the Edge is somewhere where, you know, you're in amongst lived experience, people who have all sorts of struggles, not just addiction. You know, when you're coming into recovery, you're at a loss. Mm. So it's somewhere you can get your teeth into something.
I was just walking by and the wonderful smell of the bacon caught my nose.
I've had lovely halloumi and beetroot ciabatta, lovely frittatas that you'll just see on the counter and think, I want that.
And I've been meaning to come to the Edge. I've actually passed by here several times and I keep reminding myself to, oh, I need to stop in that little cafe and at least have a coffee.
I'm sorry I'm stuffing my face right now.
Sometimes I'll have brown sauce, but it's not compulsory.
A bacon, an egg wrap, a piece of banana cake and a pot of tea.
The staff mix is great. Nothing's too much trouble. The food's really good. So it all comes together.
Yes, I really do like it here.
Just yummy food. I'm very serious about yummy food.
And over the last several years, has it turned out that way?
I think it's evolved into a really, really wonderful place that I'm very proud to be a part of.
It's the little touches in the room which really make it. Little herbs on the windowsill for the cooking, to the nice little vintage coat stand, to then the local art, just adds a real sense of community.
Yeah, the whole thing. It's just fun to come here.
You can imagine if you were coming from the environment like I have before, from like the hospital, to coming into here, it doesn't have that clinical feel.
It's a place where people can come, talk, have a hug, whatever it is, we're here, and I just love the feel. I just love the feel of it. It's a lovely place to come, to eat or to work.
Anybody can cook, and I can taste when it's not being made fresh. You know, as you say, many places you go out to, it's going to be microwaved or it's going to be brought in sandwich fillers or whatever. I'm a stickler for whether it's onion chutney, and we have our staples like our chocolate brownies, but we've introduced new wonderful things. One thing I've always loved is frangipan, and we get loads of fruits through the food hubs, and that's just as soon as one's made, another one has to be made again. One of my wonderful volunteers just recently, we had a huge amount of lemons, and so he got out a recipe and made lemon curd.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's so delicious that we put the curd into little pastry tarts.
Mm.
That's becoming a bit of a staple through the summer months.
It's hard to find reasonably priced veggie breakfast in Cambridge that's open early enough. Yeah, so great.
So there's always something vegan, always something gluten-free, and there's obviously vegetarian. But what's wonderful and really warms my heart is the amount of success stories, as in helping them get back on their feet and into the workforce. If you've done some volunteering at the Edge, whether you're a volunteer who's going to stay that way or move into paid employment somewhere else or with us if we had the position, the training here is, I think, second to none, because I'm a hard taskmaster and I like things done well. So coffee training, cashiering, cleaning, you know, we're very proud of our 5 stars, and baking and cooking. You know, food poverty, we don't want people to feel embarrassed to be there. It's a lot of people are struggling. Even if you're in work, you could be struggling. Mm. So there's that. Yeah,
oh,
so much.
That's one of the things that's happened here since I was here 8 years ago. The community fridge.
So that's really grown. So we did get a call from Fair Share to say, would you distribute food that we take from supermarkets? We're the middlemen. We're finding places. We've contacted all of the supermarkets because it all used to go in the bin before.
Yeah.
There's lovely vegetables that are perfectly fine. You know, there's obviously the best before and used by, but I will use vegetables for my soup. So yeah, it's grown huge. And then during COVID, that's when it jumped and there were food hubs all over Cambridge. And then as the Edge opened again, we put shelves up. We've got 2 chest freezers. Yeah, every day we have a huge amount of stuff from all of the supermarkets and a queue that forms from 10 to 11:30 Monday to Saturday. We distribute food going out of date.
Let's say if a listener is going, you know, I fancy going somewhere different this weekend, not the regular places.
Mm.
And I just wondered what would be
okay,
a good...
Yeah. Honestly, in Cambridge, I don't think you can get a full English as wonderful as ours. It's just like a home cooked, no reformed hash brown. It's your eggs, your bacon, your sausages, your baked beans, your black pudding, and your lovely mushrooms. If we do hash browns, they'll be the traditional ones where we will chop up a baked potato that was used the day before with some onions. It's a really hearty breakfast that you can get with a tea or a coffee for a very, I think, reasonable price. And I've never, ever not wanted to come to the Edge. It really is a wonderful place. It keeps everybody grounded.
Mm.
It can be stressful because, you know, it's a business at the end of the day, non-profit, but we do need to make ends meet. And being a part of other people's struggles daily, but it's so rewarding, I can't tell you. I've struggled with various things through that probably last 7 years. The Edge has kept me sane. It's wonderful to be able to help people every day. If you think about feeding people is one of the most important and pleasurable things you can be doing every day.
It's been nice to have this quick catch-up with you, Sarah.
Yes, thank you so much.
But for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, the Edge Cafe is right down the very end of Mill Road. Is it like number 351?
That's correct.
Yeah.
On the Brookfield Hospital site. On the edge of the Brookfield Hospital site. Hence the name. Yeah.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Sarah.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge Radio.
We did it!
You know, it's really nice to get to revisit places, and we don't often get the chance to because there's just so much going on in town, food-wise. There's a lot to cover and very little time because we've only got 2 weeks to make each episode of Flavour. Tends to warp my sense of time, definitely. I thought I'd only been to The Edge in the last couple of years, not 8 years. And it's important for us as a food programme because restaurants, bars, cafes, they change so quickly over time in their menu, their staff, their style. And it's nice to see how they're getting on. And that's community. We are community radio. That's what you're listening to. There's Supercharge with Wine, Wine, Wine taking us into our wine news. And we begin with Cambridge Wine Merchants, who has a wine tasting masterclass with Kate McIntyre, Master of Wine of Australia's Moru Duck Estate in Victoria. That's on the 10th of September at 8 p.m. in the King's Parade branch and costs £35. And tasting will include Mornington Peninsula's wines from Chardonnay, Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir grapes.
There's a tasting of wines from Tuscany on the 10th of September at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road, a cheese and wine tasting on the 17th, and a taste of Lebanon on the 18th.
WSET courses are also being run at the Wine Rooms. Level 1 on the 21st of September, Level 2 starts on the 28th, and Level 3 begins on the 9th of November. These courses are led by Steve Hovington.
If you live in Newnham, you can get weekly wine deliveries and be part of a Newnham Wine Club, which is planning tasting events. The wines are from King Street Cellar, and you can find out more by joining a WhatsApp group called Newnham Weekly Wines.
There's also a new series of wine tastings about to kick off at the Cambridge Wine Merchants, so I popped into their King's Parade branch to find out more.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
Hi, I'm Christian. And we're going to be hosting. Do you want to do it again?
Yeah, can we do it again? Is that right?
Sure.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
Hi, I'm Christian.
And we're here at Cambridge Wine Merchants.
Hosting the new series
of the Beginner's Guide to Wine.
So in the first of our series, we thought we'd start at home. With any good journey, it always starts at home. With an informal introduction into the wines of England that we stock, showing everything from kind of a rosé to the different types of reds, whites, and also sparkling in there as well, because that's what we're probably most famous for.
Yeah, so we felt that there's a lot coming into English wine now, which is fantastic, the reds and still whites, and they are really great and we want to showcase them because sparkling has taken the crown for a long time, but we feel that with the way the climate is warming, we're lucky in the sense that we get to now experience those dry whites and reds that we didn't previously.
It feels like a bit of a bold statement to be starting off your series with English wines, exactly for the reasons that you've said. You know, 10 years ago, I don't think anyone was really talking about English wines. It was still on its way up, but the weather has changed so much. There are so many vineyards in England now.
It's growing exponentially. You're seeing them pop up everywhere, and it's a great way to diversify a farm if you have a good field that has a nice south-facing slope. People are starting to pop vines in because it is making a little bit extra money for the farms. I think it's around 600, so they are definitely growing a lot. The biggest concentration is down onto the south coast, where you've got a lot of sparkling, and then up into East Anglia actually has a large quantity. We're doing really well this side of the country for them.
So we're both going to be stood at the front running people through the informal tasting as such. And the whole idea of it is you're not going to be sat with your groups. We're going to try and spread you out. You will still be with whoever you're booked with, but we're going to group you up in tables, get you talking. It's a conversation about wine. It's not a sit there with a shirt and stare at somebody talking in front of you for 20 minutes and be very polite. It's more of like, it's to break down the wall of I have no idea and I feel uncomfortable to ask, and to kind of get to the point where you feel comfortable enough that the hardest thing within wine is learning, and the easiest way to learn is to drink. And that's what puts a lot of people off, because you see all these big words and you have no idea what they mean. The easiest way to learn is to pick a wine that says I'm big and bold and it tastes like strawberries, taste it and go, why does that taste like strawberries, and then work from there, and then you start to understand. And that's kind of what the series is trying to do, break down each country, region, style, and then get people involved. You might not like every wine that you try, but that's the love of wine. There's thousands of different options and styles out there that hopefully you can find one that you do like, but you shouldn't love everything. If everybody loved everything, it'd all be a bit boring in the wine industry. So that's kind of the plan.
And we're hoping to equip people with a little bit of knowledge, understand some of those words, because sometimes when you do come in, we get excited talking about the wine and we start using words that aren't necessarily in most people's vocabulary. What we're trying to do is, if someone says this, this is what they're talking about. They're not just spouting a word that sounds like it's...
The one that we always get is when people come in and you try and talk about the difference between it. They go, they want a dry white, and then we say to them, OK, so do you know what dry actually means? And then that's always the first big broach, is it's got nothing to do with the way it feels in your mouth. Like, it's nothing to do if it's a dry feel, as that's what a lot of people get confused by, where dryness is just to do with sugar in the wine. So it's to do with how sweet it is. A dry wine means it's less sugar. And that's always one of those things where I always find when I say to people, oh, dry, and then they go, oh, no, I don't want it to be like a... And they go back to the idea of a red with tannins, and when it grips in your palate, I'm like, that's not what dry means. But then it's not meant to be rude. It's like, no, like, we're trying to educate as we go along. But that's one of the, I think, the hardest things to get through, is that, like, it's all education, it's all learning. There's so much out there, and don't feel bad to ask a question. Do just ask away. That's what we're here for.
Do you guys ever get to visit vineyards in England?
Yeah, we do.
What's it actually like? Because I think some people might have in their mind that episode of Absolutely Fabulous where they went to France and they just hung out in a vineyard eating cheese and just drinking themselves silly.
It kind of depends which vineyard you go to. Most likely, if you go visit a vineyard, it's like an informal show around the sites. They'll show you the vines, then the winemaking facilities, and also the bottling process if they do that in-house. And then usually you sit down in a room at the end and just get to drink through the whole range. And if you're lucky, some previous vintages as well. So it's a lot of fun.
I was really lucky to work within a vineyard up in Shropshire. I helped out a couple of times for the harvest. So when they have lunch, the lunch is made by the family and you're sat out on long tables, and when it was sunny outside, when it wasn't, in a tent, and everyone's having a laugh, and then you go out into the vines and picking, and it's just a really sort of got that community feel and absolutely beautiful.
Tasting of 6 wines, was that right?
Yeah, so we've picked the wines. The way the series will work is at 8 p.m. is when they'll start. We'll get you all seated onto your tables, and then it's just an informal throw through 6 wines. So for the English one, we've got a few reds, a few whites, sparkling, maybe another surprise in there if we get round to it, but it just depends really what we're feeling. I'm trying not to give too much away. But that will be the format going forward, and then it's just a conversation. So we'll pour the first wine, bit of conversation with the group, bit of conversation with everybody. If anybody has any questions, they can ask us then, and then we'll just roll the evening on through whilst we're drinking. If you're a quick drinker, the tasting can be done very quickly. If you like to take your time and have a conversation and talk about what we're doing, then the evening could go on a bit longer. But usually about 2 hours is roughly how long it takes to go through about 6 wines. So yeah, should be a good evening.
So this is the first in a series of...
There'll be about 20 regions that we'll probably cover through the series, but if there's still people happy to carry on, then we can venture into specific grape varieties and things like that. It's an endless series in theory. So we'll keep going until everyone's satisfied.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Christian and Sarah.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming to talk to us.
Yeah, that's the Beginner's Guide to Wine. It's on the 29th of August at the King's Parade branch of Cambridge Wine Merchants. Tickets are £25 and they're available online at cambridgewine.com. When you're there, just head over to their tastings and events page, or you can buy a ticket in one of their shops.
£25 seems very reasonable to me.
It's not bad at all.
Well, I was just remembering that we used to have a very regular feature with somebody from Cambridge Wine called Alice.
Oh, Alice Archer.
Right,
yeah,
and
yeah.
She used to talk about, you know, wines, and she was just incredibly knowledgeable.
She was,
And
with us
she went
years.
Off to work at Cambridge Wine's office or something.
Yeah.
Is she still there?
No, I found out recently after that she's like chief wine taster or chief wine purchaser at Harrods.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you spotted talent there, Matt.
God, yeah. She was great. She was with us for years, wasn't she? And there's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Yeah, actually, and starting off with wine. King Street Cellar has the second of its Book and Wine Club evenings on the 4th of September from 7 till 9 p.m. The book will be The Chalk Circle Man by Fred Vargas, and Ben from King Street Cellar chooses wine that matches the book, which is rather clever of him. And on the 2nd of October, this is looking ahead, also at King Street Cellar, there's a dips and sips evening. Five wines and five dips, which come to you on warm sourdough. Sounds delicious. And this weekend, the Hoops in Barton, there's food vans and Thai food along with music. Tonight, the food comes from Mudder Spudders. So there's not a lot on social media today, but anyway, that's some of it. And let's have a look now at, we've got a bit of time, I think, yes. We'll have a look at what's in The Guardian's Feast magazine. And, you know, sometimes you see something in Feast and it almost makes you weep because it sounds so nice. Rachel Roddy, in her Tales from an Italian Kitchen column, has a recipe and an essay about fig, ricotta and orange tart. Ooh. It just sounds too good to be true. The first thing I noticed, because I always tend to work from the back to the front, I don't know whether it's because I'm left-handed or what. But anyway, on the back page is Grace Dent, who's always amusing, reviews a restaurant not in Cambridge but in Bury St Edmunds, which is a very good place for food. Mm. It's called Bellotta, and she praises it very highly. And it's interesting because also in Bury St Edmunds, when I was talking to Richard Stokes of Finboys, we were talking about restaurants we've been to recently, and he'd been to Lark in Bury St Edmunds, which is in a converted bus stop. And he'd been there and said how good it was. And in fact, it was Jay Rayner's restaurant of the year, I think the year before last. So there's some good places to eat in Bury St Edmunds. But a lot of recipes in today's Guardian Feast magazine include tomatoes, which is, you know, quite good because there are a lot of tomatoes around at the moment. Romy Gill has tomatoes the Indian way. That's a recipe for a tomato curry. And tamatar rice, which is rice cooked in spices and tomatoes. I grow tomatoes and mine are just becoming ripe now, but I went to buy some tomato plants. I mean, normally I grow tomatoes from seed, but I went to buy some tomato plants from Flourish in April. You know, they had a sort of open day. And I bought some of the most fantastic sounding tomato plants. There was one called Berkeley Pink Sunset.
Okay.
And one called Red Sky at Night. And I was terribly excited because I'd never heard of these varieties of tomato. And I was talking to AD from Sweet Pea Market Garden about them. And she said that they are American varieties because Calixta from Flourish has, you know, she's worked in America and she knows local produce.
Yeah.
So I was terribly excited about these tomato plants. And you're supposed not to plant them too early, you know, like you're supposed to plant them outdoors after the end of May. But I was going away at the last week in May, so I planted them just before the end of May. Mm. And there was a frost and they all died.
Oh, no.
So I'm just left with the ones that I grew from seed, which, you know, will be nice. Anyway, so I shall use some of these tomato recipes. Tomatoes, strawberries and sumac feta salad. Fantastic. So some really nice tomato recipes, if only I had some special tomatoes to go with them. Anyway, that's Feast.
And that is Green Tomatoes rather than Green Onions, signalling our start of the job section. We begin with Finboys in Mill Road, who are seeking to expand their opening days, and they need two additional chefs. So here is Richard Stokes with the details.
Yeah, we're looking for two staff to sort of join our team of five currently. The right person has got to get used to cooking in front of customers because it's not something that all chefs can do. Some experience would be great, but if there's not a great deal of experience for one of the members of staff, that's not a big problem. So in chef parlance, we're probably looking at sort of a CDP or a junior CDP, but you know, they must be used to not be afraid of cooking in front of customers and actually serving them as well.
And is there a closing date or are you fairly flexible?
No. We're open to anyone applying, really. Probably it would be nice to get something in place by middle of October.
Bricks and Mortar in Whittlesford has a vacancy for a CDP, a chef de partie. It's a full-time permanent post working 4.5 days out of 7 with Mondays and Tuesdays off and 3 evening shifts a week.
Now Stir at the Old Swiss in Cherry Hinton Road are looking for a full-time front of house. If you'd like to apply, just email explaining why you're interested in this job along with your CV to recruitment@yourstir.co.uk.
It's a good-looking place, Stir, isn't it?
It's a great place, and whenever I go down Cherry Hinton Road, no matter what time of day it seems, it's always packed because they've got outdoor seating and it's really good sun trap, and it's just popular. It's like instantly popular.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Cambridge Sustainable Food needs volunteer drivers who collect surplus food from supermarkets and deliver them to local food projects. So if you have a vehicle and could be available on a weekday morning, please contact them via email. That's alex@cambridgesustainablefood.org, and you can find out more.
All of which brings us to the end of today's Flavour programme, and you can catch us on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon, and we're repeated on Sunday at 1 p.m, next Monday at 2 p.m, and Tuesday at 6 p.m. And of course, Flavour will be available as a podcast early next week. Coming up next on Cambridge Radio is Northern Soul with Tony Della, followed by Neil Jones' Rock Show, and we round off the evening with Gary Blue's Blues Show at 11 p.m.
But that's all from us. We'll be back on the 6th of September with lots more food and drink, news, jobs and features. So until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.